So, hello everybody. Welcome to episode podcast 42 of the Alexis Hale podcast.
We're flying through them.
Yeah, we're doing one a week at the moment because of the situation in Palestine, in Gaza. And this week we talk to an old friend of the show, Adam Broomberg. Adam is a South African Jew and he a photographer, visual artist, lives in Germany and has always used his experience of his, I suppose, powered in a way by his family's experiences during the Holocaust.
Yeah.
As he has empowered him or forced him, in a sense, to speak out for Palestine at the moment.
And his experiences in apartheid South Africa as well.
I think, you know, in the Netflix series Stranger Things, there's a kind of alternative reality called the Upside Down, which is below the town where they all live. And I think living in Germany at the moment must be like living in the Upside Down, where those who speak for the oppressed, for people who are being murdered, have the entire ferocity of the state brought down on them. It is the most, I find it, of all the many hypocrisies and lies and cruelties of the Western world's behavior towards the Palestinians, I find the situation in Germany just, I mean, there's nobody, I mean, is there a German word for irony? I don't know what it is, but you know, I really think they should apply it. Anyway, an old friend of the show, Adam Broomberg. Okay, so welcome to podcast number 42. We're putting out one a week at the moment because of the situation in Gaza. And now to look at the European dimension, I suppose we have somebody we've interviewed before from Germany. We have Adam Broomberg. Hi, Adam.
Hi, both of you. Good to see you.
Welcome back, Adam.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, the more and more I think of this terrible situation, the attitude of the German government in Germany just is, I mean, you know, amongst the many, many horrors of this, the behavior of the German government and Olaf Scholz is just mind-bogglingly awful. So I guess we just, you know, just tell us about that, really, Adam, how your life is at the moment and what's going on over there.
And quickly, before you start, just to our listeners, if you haven't heard the first episode with Adam Broomberg, if you are in for the long haul, go back and listen to that and get some context on who this brilliant man is. And we talked about Palestine a lot on his last...
I don't know where, Talal, where we left off. Had I been arrested yet?
No, you hadn't. No, that had happened afterwards.
So after we spoke to you... I hadn't been arrested, yeah.
No, you hadn't.
Okay, so... just a quick recap. I got back from my mother's funeral to face this tsunami of accusations from the so-called Commission of Anti-Semitism, who accused me of being a hateful anti-Semite who advocates for terrorism against Jews in all the media, every single media in Germany. And then I attended not even a protest, a commemoration back in May of the Nakba, the 75th anniversary of the Nakba. And it was organized by an organization called Jüdische Stimme, Jewish Voice. And the reason they organized it is because all the Palestinian organizations who tried to organize commemorations were banned. So the Jewish organization one was allowed. And, you know, it was like a sunny, beautiful day, spring day. There were grandparents, there were little kids, you know. It was like... And the Jewish community obviously gave the platform to some Palestinian people to speak. And within about 20, 30 minutes, the riot police like arrived in their droves and just like parallel lines, just closed this thing down. There's a lot of footage about it. And in fact, you contacted me yesterday about 5 minutes after I opened the post to Lau, and I opened this letter that came from the Berlin police. Finally, I've been charged, and
because you got arrested.
I got arrested at this thing. So 11 people were arrested. I think kind of a mixture of Jews and Palestinians and who knows what. You know, there was like one guy, you know, in his like late 60s. You know, just a mix of a real mix of people. I got arrested. So what happened is I landed up facing this policeman, you know, because they made these lines, and I was kind of like facing this policeman. And I looked at this guy and I said to him, this is all on video because everybody's like filming with their phones, right, from every angle. And I looked at this guy. I said to him, I said quite quietly, I said to him, where were your grandparents during the war? And he just kept quiet. And I said, do you want to know where my grandparents were? And he said, I don't care. At which point I turned around. And when I turned around, literally maybe three of these like big German riot police like hit me, like I was just on, they were on my back, you know. Obviously you're like, your body just kind of struggles to resist, you know what I mean? And like, this is not the first time I've been arrested by the riot police. The first time was, you know, I've done this before around the age of 18 in South Africa, you know, facing exactly the same police, really, and the same techniques and stuff. So it's kind of in my body, you know. So I knew what was happening. Then they handcuffed me so tight, these idiots, that they couldn't. And the handcuff was biting into my arm. It was literally cutting into the skin, and they had done it so tightly they couldn't release it. So I was bent over double for about 2 hours until they called the fire brigade, who then came with these like,
shut up, no way.
No, seriously. And I was like, I said to them, I was like, listen, I said, you guys should go to Israel to learn how to do this. Like, you guys are fucking totally inept. It's like, you incompetent fucking idiots. And you know, like, so I'm bent over double like this, right? And then the fire brigade comes, like, releases me. And then, you know, and this is filmed from every single angle. And then yesterday in the post arrived this letter of my charges, which are total fabrications. First of all, they say, I instead of what I just recounted, I said to the, they accused me of saying that I said to the a riot policeman that his grandparents should have been in a concentration camp, and they accused me of injuring a policeman. I mean, these cops were dressed like Judge Dredd, you know. So it was like, and there were, I mean, you can see in the video footage, there was like three on top of me. There was about 12 of them around. I was black and blue for the next week. And I'm being accused of hurting them. And then the final third criminal charge is resisting German authority. And my reply to that is, you know, the majority of my ancestors were killed for not resisting German authority. I will resist German authority until the day I fucking die. You know what I mean? That is not a criminal act. That's like,
yeah. So what is the situation there with, I mean, does anybody in the, I don't know anything really about German society or German culture very much. So, I mean, what is the doesn't anybody in the sort of mainstream on comedy television shows or whatever point out the irony of all this shit?
Nothing. Nothing. Really? There is like, it's like McCarthyite. It's like the Inquisition, man. It feels like the Inquisition. Someone just sent me images from Alexanderplatz last night. There are billboards all over Alexanderplatz with images of.
Is that in Berlin? Is that a central?
Yeah, that's the center of Berlin, of the Bundesreich, and with the Israeli and the German flag next to it, and it says solidarity with Israel, right? And there are three flags: Israeli, German, and European flag, and it says solidarity with Israel. Okay, this is all over Berlin. Three nights ago on the, what's the Brandenburg Gate was projected the Israeli flag. Yeah?
Yeah.
Like projected, like, I mean, like, where does your head go, right?
What about the graffiti? Berlin's a hub of graffiti and street culture. Is there any on the street against this?
No. So Zollernallee, which is like, in Kreuzberg, which is the heart of, you know, Berlin is home to the biggest Palestinian community in Europe in exile, yeah? And Zollernallee is the heart of that community. And it's the most gorgeous street. You like go down there. It's like the best hummus and falafel and like, you know, the best food on the planet. And it's normally covered in Palestinian flags and painted and posters and stuff. Gone. I was there 3 days ago. It's like there are just police vans. Everything's been painted over, ripped down. I went to meet... This is two nights ago. I went to meet a dear friend of mine called Lamis. She is a Palestinian actor. She was doing a play. She was due to do a play in November, and it got canceled. Like not even political, but had Palestinian content. Cancelled. Right. Cancelled. So I went over to her house. And I was trying to help her to, because Der Spiegel wanted to interview her, and we were trying to kind of craft, you know, because it's so dangerous. It's like, it feels to me, I mean, when I read about, you know, we all read about what happened during, like, you know, McCarthy times. This is what's going on.
It's extraordinary. And I get the sense that even the left really goes along with all this shit as well, really. What stands for the left in Germany, or what opposition is there?
That, you know, there's a small enclave of opposition. There's an organization called Diaspora Alliance, who are absolutely magnificent. And that's, it's mostly German Jews, a lot of former Israelis in Germany, a lot of Jews from elsewhere, but that's still kind of committed, hardcore, smart, plugged in left, yeah. But it's small. Yeah. I mean, we have meetings. It reminds me of South Africa, you know, in my teens, where we have meetings. There's 20, 30 people in a room,
right. And what of public opinion? Because here, I mean, polls have shown that public opinion, despite all the propaganda, is massively supportive of the Palestinian cause. I mean, hugely. Would that be, what is the case in Germany?
There is such an ominous kind of dense atmosphere of fear that I think, like, the public does not have an opinion, put it that way. You know what I mean?
Really?
Seriously. Really? And it's like... Yeah, so all the demonstrations are banned. A number of my friends, even just standing in the street with a Palestinian flag, police stop, arrest. You know, like brutally arrest and put in a van and take it. So you can't show a Palestinian flag. You can't say anything in public.
Yeah. And where does this, where does the impulse for all this come from then? Is the, you know, German guilt about the Holocaust, is that just a mask?
That's the obvious answer, isn't it?
I'm suspicious.
That's the obvious answer. I've got to say, and I keep saying this, is that that's the quick answer. That's layer one.
Yeah.
But let's go a little bit deeper here. Like as if we were on the psychoanalytical chair, right? Because the first layer would be like, oh, I feel guilty about what I did. Oh yeah, you feel guilty, do you? Okay, let's let that plumb line go a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say it's not about guilt, it's about desire.
Okay.
And what is that desire? Is that we know that in the 1930s, the Nazis and the Zionists collaborated a lot because they had the same intention. And we mentioned this, I think, in the last podcast, in the last time we met. They had the same intention, get the Jews out of Europe, get the Jews out of Germany. Denazification never happened. When people talk about neo-Nazis, it's not neo-Nazis. It's Nazis.
Yeah.
And the Christian, the CDU, which is, you know, the Christian Nationalist Party, which is in power, the mayor of Berlin is a CDU, you know, is a Christian nationalist. It's not their guilt, it's their desire that they're wanting to enact. They want to get rid of all immigrant populations. They want to get rid of, so Kreuzberg and Neukölln are the two main areas, in the West,
mm-hmm.
which hold most of the immigrant population, which, you know, Angela Merkel graciously allowed in, like from 2011, most of the Syrians arrived, you remember that, a million in 2015. Yes. Okay. I'll give you some facts here. So the budget for 2023 to 2024 for those two areas has been cut by something like, what is it? I don't have it. It's like 22% or something or more. Okay.
Right.
So what, and specifically for children, for single mothers and for addicts. So, okay, then I'll give you another fact, is that in July of this year, every single public swimming pool in Berlin, they made a law, they had a police van outside every single swimming pool, and they were ethnically
kind of profiling
people coming into the swimming pools. You have to show your ID card. And basically the law was that no more than three people of color, they didn't say of color, but no more than three people were male people were to gather at any one point because supposedly there was an increase in crime. In fact, if you look at the police reports from 2019 to 21, crime's gone down 22%.
Right.
So, what I'm saying is this is not about German guilt, man. It's not about German guilt. It's about German desire. And I think that's what I'd like to say. Because
I mean what you're essentially saying is that those desires, those currents in German society that I don't know, I mean of extreme right wingness are still there and still predominate?
Yeah, I think that they want a white Christian nationalist state. That's like if you had to inject every German with a truth serum.
Yeah.
And say to them, "What's your real fucking desire?" That's what they'd come out with, man.
Really?
Yeah,
and that's Germany was strong left wing forces in Germany, certainly.
It's not universal, of course. And you know, of course, like you know, I mean, I just got the train from Berlin up to Baden, you know, I mean, this like weird little town, you know, and And people are good to each other. You know, people are like, we know that. We know, like, humans love each other. You know, it's the states that,
right.
You know, but I think that, but we also got to compare. You know, I just sent to Talal just before we started the conversation a tweet that just came out, which showed that the whole Talal, you could say it better than me. Just describe what that tweet is.
Well, yeah, in America, the Senate just unanimously voted that any pro-Palestinian groups in universities should be labeled as pro-Hamas,
really,
rather than pro-Hummus. So, like any pro-Palestine student protesters in any university in America, unanimously voted by the Senate, which it says including Rand Paul and Bernie Sanders. And to be honest, I have been a bit disappointed in the lack of voice from Bernie Sanders. He hasn't said shit.
Where the
about
fuck
Palestine.
Is Bernie Sanders, man?
It is a complete destruction of freedom of speech and a distortion and animalization of a whole group of people, basically saying anyone who supports Palestine is pro-terrorist. That language coming out of an official office such as the Senate is fucking dangerous and really scary. Mm.
So let me tell you,
and
one
you
more
can't, you know, you yeah. were. I'm yeah, glad sorry. You pointed out that you were just, you know, you're not talking about humanity in general and about people in general, universally speaking, because I know that you've also, you so you're going through your shit, you're dealing with an attack from the state on your case at the moment. And looking at the news and the press, it is hard to think that the whole world isn't against us.
But, yeah. It's an interesting point, Bernie Sanders. I don't know whether it's that old Jew thing where you just, you know, something I worry about that in myself sometimes, that you become more pro-Israeli as you age or something. I don't know. Or maybe exactly. He's always been more disappointing than we think, really.
Oh, but this, the level of tribalism to which this thing that we've all kind of been forced to supposedly fall into, you know, this my people bullshit. It's like, who are my people?
Yeah.
What does that mean? And it's like, but it's so surprising the kind of, you know, the messages I'm getting from kind of people who are considered kind of absolute allies in a struggle that I've been, I've been active since the age of 15, and suddenly, you know, there's people who there's never been a moment of discord with, are like, sorry, dude, yeah, you've gone too far for me. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, I'm not even going to go into the death threats, you know. So since we spoke, I also got a death threat sprayed outside my front door of my apartment, inside the building.
Right.
Fuck, man, I'm sorry, dude.
No, I mean, it's like, you know, none of us are in Gaza, right?
Yeah.
No, exactly.
That's it. So, like, there's nothing. Every morning I wake up, I don't feel an iota of self-pity, because, and like, you know, we have to fight. And the more they try and silence us, the more we've got to speak out, because.
Yeah. It makes you grateful in a way. You do think Britain's bad enough, but Christ, I mean, we've got. There's massive, I mean, not that in the end will count for much, but there is massive public support for Palestine here. And the government so far hasn't cracked. There's been attempts to crack down on demonstrations, but without success. There's been huge demonstrations.
Yeah. Was it 300,000 on the streets last week? And then there's another one tomorrow, should be even bigger.
Yeah. And also the discourse, the mainstream media, while kind of terrible, are not like super terrible. I saw a big change after the attack on the Al Ahli Hospital that for the first time I saw pro-Palestinian speakers being treated with politeness and courtesy.
Right.
It took the death of 500 innocent civilians in a hospital to do that, but at least, I can't watch an awful lot of the coverage, but relatively speaking, people, I think pro-Palestinian voices are not being shouted down and not being attacked in the same way as they were in the early days. And I think that's
not in the UK, but not in the UK. In America and in Germany, and it's McCarthy. It's black. A group of us, I wasn't involved in writing the actual letter, but there was a letter drafted from the art world community that was published in this week. And, 8,000 members of the art world, like all the top artists and stuff, it was published in Art Forum, which is considered, the kind of preeminent, the main kind of art publication in America and the world. And
so these were German or these were American?
No, international.
International.
Totally international. Yeah. So there was a huge backlash. Why was there a backlash? Because first and foremost, the atrocities of October 7th were not acknowledged, right? And so there was this huge backlash. The group responded by adding an addendum which said, obviously, we assume that, none of us condone the loss of any civilian lives. We presumed that that was a given. So this addendum was added, and Art Forum, what did they respond by doing? They fired the editor in America.
For publishing it.
For publishing that letter.
Right.
They have fired the editor of Art Forum. And it's like, so, I can tell the stories I can tell you of artists' friends whose work is being pulled from the gallery walls. There's threats, people who post in social media. It's a very interesting time because I said to you 2 days ago, I went to meet my friend Lamis, the Palestinian actor. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And last night I had dinner with an Israeli, very left-wing Israeli architect. And we had a really interesting talk because what I realized, and this is something I want to say, is that what I realized is that, as you two both know, I have a sister who lives in Israel. She, her husband fought in Sabra and Shatila in the 80s. Her son, my nephew, fought in 2019 in Gaza. He's now being called up again, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what I realized sitting with this person last night and listening to her reality is that over the last few years, every time I've gone, I arrive in Ben Gurion Airport and I drive straight into Palestine. So I know what life is like in Palestine, in occupied Palestine. I've spent so much time in Bethlehem, in Ramallah, in mostly in Hebron. I actually don't know what life in Israel is like right now. And this is not me being apologetic or saying we need to acknowledge the atrocities of October 7th. I'm just saying that life in Israel for Israelis is fucking hell too at the moment because, they've got a fascist leader who nobody, like probably 10% of that country is supporting. Well, maybe a few more, same as Trump.
Although I've been hearing that Trump support is rising now because of Biden's inability to condemn the genocide that Israel are doing. And a lot of MAGA people are starting to put Palestinian flags in their social media profiles and stuff.
Oh, my God. I mean,
they're adopting this cause.
Oh my God! The twists and turns of like of
can you imagine?
The point I'm trying to make is that sitting with this woman Maya last night, and just for a moment, I kind of switched off my, you know, because I have to function a bit like a soldier, you know. I wake up in the morning and I'm a bit like. To get the energy, I'm just like, ugh. And I like, you know, my Instagram is like a fucking TV station. I have to answer, like, I wake up in the morning, I've got 400 things to reply to. I feel so tuned in to kind of Palestinian, like, life under the occupation. And even what I'm trying to say is even having a sister in Israel, I feel quite tuned out to the terror that they are feeling by being misrepresented by a government that is so out of control, you know? And as, like, this is not me saying, like, you know, we need to empathize with Israelis, but You hear what I'm saying, right?
Well, not quite. No, I mean, what? Just want to expand on that a bit more. I mean, is support that low? Haven't they all sort of rallied behind Netanyahu? And I don't know. I mean, I mean, I do think my feeling has always been about Israel. I've never been there. I have obviously Israeli friends, but you must have to suppress an enormous amount of yourself to function that country.
I mean, that country is just, it's a nation built on trauma. I mean, every single person is a soldier. Every single person has gone through,
conscription.
Not only conscription, from the age of four, they're already being indoctrinated, and then they're being militarized and like through a grinding machine. So they're like, it's a brutalized nation, you know.
Yes, I think it probably is. Yeah,
it's just so brutalized. I mean, it has, and so tribal, you know,
yes.
And so like, you know. That killing that happened in Maine yesterday, you know, it's like that's like the state of Israel. It's like all those like armed kids, you know, just like just let loose with like M16s, you know, rage.
It must be an extraordinarily unhealthy society. So where do you think all this is going? If you could just, you know, briefly tell us what's going to happen.
I think what we need to do is we need to hang in there. We need to every day check in on like any Palestinian friends that we or colleagues that we have. Like, you know, that's what we need to be doing. You know, we need to
here or there or both.
Everywhere. And also
it's
we
true.
Need to be and we need to be acting with each other. Like the only thing keeping me going is like seeing people, you know, communicating. I think that this is going to be, you know, it's Iraq again, but it's closer to home, me. It's just like, you know, Palestine's been my place since I was a teenager. But I know many Iraqis, you know, and they had to just sit and keep shtum and watch a million people be pulverized. And then the truth came out and nothing was done about it. And I think that's where we're heading.
Not words of hope there. I mean, I mean, that is the most...
All we're doing is relying on these archaic systems, archaic international relationships to solve a problem that we know they're not going to fucking solve. They're just,
and I don't think the fight is in Israel and Palestine. That's not where the fight is. The fight's in America.
Yeah.
And this is the point, is this is not like everyone's talking about a war. First of all, it's not a war. It's not a conflict between Israel and Hamas. First of all, Israel collaborates with Hamas. Netanyahu created Hamas. Netanyahu works with Hamas. They're in the same fucking office. Okay. This is not about Israel and Palestine. The war is in America. And where we should be targeting, this is all about what we do with America right now.
Yeah.
Do
we have any influence there? I mean, how do you affect that? I mean, I don't disagree. In the end, it is the United States that, you know, is the wellspring from which this comes, but I don't quite know what you...
Well, I mean, some things of hope is like, you know, the biggest activist on the planet at the moment, Sean King, who you've seen him on social media. He has kind of 6 or 7 million followers, you know. He's become, you know, sustained every 15 minutes, sustained posts from... about Palestine. And I think back the way that Black Lives Matter was sold out by the Israel lobby, we can go into that another time, but the way that Black Lives Matter was undermined, what's happening now is intersectional solidarity. Is that what's clear with like Mark Lamont Hill, with Sean King? You know,
I pretended to know who these people are, but I don't.
Okay, Mark Lamont Hill is like, well, I mean,
the CNN anchor who.
No, he was fired from CNN and then. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and now he has his own web newscast show, but has really important interviews on there, and has
drilled black American. He fucking, you know, he's hardcore and he's consistent, and he's like, why should black people care about Palestine? This is why. And Sean King, you know, biggest activist on social media around Black Lives Matter, around anything, you know, any kind of social issue in America. It's been like when they closed down Eyes on Palestine, you know, the biggest account that had 30 million followers or something, Meta closed them down 3 days ago. Sean King just like carried on posting for them, you know, and
these are important fucking voices, and these will be a subject of record. But you bring up Black Lives Matter, and they've been really amazing in their outspoken support of Palestine. But I think there are lots of minorities all over the West that are speaking out. And I think, you know, the age old saying, like, none of us are free until we're all free. And that's I think that's why it's important.
I mean, I think that the clue to all of this is the Woman Life Freedom Movement in Iran.
Oh, the Iran,
yeah. Now, I really think that they're the clue, and I am in quite fraught, but in communication with one of their key activists who's based in Tehran, and we speak daily, and she's hardcore. She is hardcore. This woman, Dilaram, is in her late 20s, maybe early 30s. Yeah. She is on the streets every day. She has had boiling water poured over her by the morality police. She's been, the first time she was beaten and detained, she was 16. You know, she's been through it all. She was, in 2019, she was accepted to the Yale School of Art. And she decided not to go and to stay in Tehran to fight. Now, if you look at the roots of that movement, and you look at the geopolitics of this thing. You know, we know that $6 billion were pumped from the IGRC, from the Iranians into Hamas in the last 12 months. So, you know,
that's the revolutionary guards, the IGRC.
Exactly. Yeah. And all of those people who took part on October 7th were trained and armed by Iran. So mm-hmm. if you look at the geopolitics of it, and if you look at the ethos and the kind of the language and the what woman life freedom actually stands for, that is the clue to all of the stuff, because it's an anti-patriarchal, it's a anti-jihadist. It's an anti, you know, it's a very, very, very interesting movement. And I think that whereas Palestine so much often aligned with an anti-apartheid movement, and mm-hmm. of course, it's historically, it's been so important to point out the parallels between apartheid South Africa and Palestine. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I think that now that may be doing us a bit of a disservice, where we could, you know, the word occupation suffices for now. And the other thing is where it's seen as an indigenous struggle for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the Woman Life Freedom Movement offers a kind of nuance and an insight that's for me, and an understanding of the geopolitics of that area. Like, what, you know, what's going on between
the conventional left viewpoint should surely be to sort of park to see Hamas as a somewhat flawed, but you know, a resistance movement, and sort of park their connections with the cruel theocracy in Iran and stuff. You think that the struggle against the theocracy in Iran has to go on? That can't be. I mean, is that what you are saying?
What I'm saying is, you know, historically, us members of the left can embrace complexity, unlike the right. And we need to continue to embrace complexity here. And we need to be open and outspoken about the fact that there is a link between the IGRC and Hamas.
Right.
And we need to, as much as the fact that Israel created Hamas and that it allows for the leadership to be in Tehran and stuff. But so what I'm trying to say is that this is a nuanced thing, and I think I would just keep a really keen eye on the Woman Life Freedom Movement, because you know, I know, like Della Ram says to me, she says, you have a better understanding of apartheid than I do, but I have a better understanding of the geopolitics than you will ever have.
Yes. I've always thought that, you know, obviously the theocracy, the government of Iran, is both corrupt and cruel. How do you think that they will achieve their ends in Iran? I mean, this is an interesting direction that this conversation has taken. Yeah. So, I mean, how do you think? It seems to me that the Republican Guard and so on, or Revolutionary Guard, whatever they call it, are so buried in, you know, so secure in Iranian society. I don't see how they can be shifted, really.
All I can say is that, you know, 6 months into this kind of dialogue and relationship with Della Ram, this activist,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I've never seen somebody that brave who manages to get up every morning and go and stand outside the prison in Tehran. And I think we've just got to continue doing our work. You know, Alexei, you keep saying, like, what's the prognosis? As if, like, I just think we just need to keep on fighting with fire. It's like,
right.
Because
perfectly reasonable point to make, yeah, rather than predicting some outcome, yeah. I think that's a very good point, really, yeah.
Because you're
saying also continue the fight everywhere, not just sort of prioritize in a sense Palestine, but also not forget the struggle of women in Iran
and also Congo, and also, like, you know, I've done a lot of work with Sea Watch, and, you know, I was off the coast of Libya, you know, in 2017 or 18 or something. Like, people are still trying to cross the Mediterranean, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for me, like, my hero of all time is the poet and theorist and Fred Moten, the American Fred Moten. And I mean, if you could have a conversation with Fred Moten, he's like, he is the most magnificent human being, because he just talks about intersectional solidarity, and he talks so beautifully.
Yeah.
He says we need to learn to tread lightly on the earth, on the planet, without the sense of propriety. And he talks about how property starts with, like, literally in the domestic sphere. You know, I own my little home, yeah, and it has a white picket fence around it in America, and a mowed lawn, which is a colonial construct. Or in England, you know, we have our little, you know, apartment or our thing, and then it spreads outwards and it becomes then the nation state. But what and his key point is, he says, nation states do not have rights. Nation states are meant to look after the rights of the people that live within them, but not at the expense of the people who do not live within them.
Yes.
And he's such a beautiful man. And it's like,
we'll try and get him on.
Oh my God, he's the best. He is the best man. And he's like, and his knowledge of jazz, excuse me, like, talk to him about music.
What's his name again?
Fred Moten. He's magic. He is magic.
Well, I do love, the idea of intersectional solidarity in that.
We're looking for what the solution is here, so maybe he's got it.
And all oppressed people standing together, and that, whether that's by race or sexuality or fucking skin color, there are
exactly.
People being oppressed all over the place.
Yeah.
And they are, on the most part, coming together, but apart from the Hindus in India, which is a really disappointing to see, as post people who used to be colonized for a very fucking long time, to be standing so firmly with Israel is disappointing.
But can I ask you too, because, you know, I've had days in the last few weeks where I've really struggled. Like about 2 weeks ago, I had a couple of days where I was like, I was struggling to get out of bed.
Yeah.
And I just want to know, like, because my, like, for me, the biggest struggle is where we lose meaning.
Yeah.
And I just want, you know, like,
yeah,
where it becomes like, you know, it's like, fuck it, just fuck it. You know, I mean, we've lost the battle against, like, climate change. We've lost the battle against colonialism. You know, it's like, I just have those moments each day where I'm like, I'm ready to throw in the rag, you know?
Yeah. I know. Well, I think all of us have. Well, certainly, I've had similar Our feelings over the last few weeks. It is incredibly difficult, I think, for any decent human being in many ways, and certainly ones who've, you know, been involved in the struggles that we're involved in, you much more than me, to get up every morning, really. And I don't particularly have any answers. If you thought of having a holiday from this, sort of going somewhere nice.
No, I mean, what gets me through is, like, you know, I've got pathetic, you know, it's like I've got two kids, and like just making sure that they're okay, and like they're feeling the joy of life and of music and of like, you know, like looking at the fucking the change of seasons, you know, that like it's basic stuff like that. But I mean, I you know, this is sounding
You said it earlier. We're not in Gaza, and this
we're not in Gaza.
How much pain we're feeling, mate? I didn't manage to peel myself out of bed till 11:30 today. I'm waking up every day to images of like dismembered children and mourning parents, and I can feel a weight in my chest growing every day. It's really, it's really.
My wife's an insomniac. Her response is not to sleep at all, and my response is to sleep all the time. So we don't see much of each other because I'm just passed out. I'm just passed out a lot of time. But I think this is really interesting to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, how people like us in this time.
Yeah.
How we cope, but also how we're feeling as well. You know, I think this is such a fascinating area.
It's really important.
And in fact, I mean, I don't know whether they'll use it, but I was saying that I just did a big interview with BBC, which is supposedly going to go out on the main news on either Sunday or Monday in the 6 o'clock and the 10 o'clock. And they actually said, "How are you feeling?" Which I thought was like really interesting. You know, I said, "I feel terrible. I woke up, you know, I just feel awful."
Yeah.
I also lost a very good friend about 5 days ago, my best friend, really.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, just to add, you know, adds to the fun, really.
I think this is important for people at home to hear, because I've been
hearing really
from our friends, like, it's not weird to feel depressed. I'm extremely depressed at the moment. I'm crying most nights. I'm crying.
Yeah, yeah. We need to check in.
I called my Palestinian friend earlier today, and he sounded so much worse than I am. He's here in London, but he sounded awful. Yeah. And I was shocked, and I'm going to be checking in with him more often now. He sounded terrible. He's exhausted, depressed, worried, and he says that what we're seeing now is the beginning of a much larger genocide.
Exactly.
We feel so feeble because our only weapons are our voice. But when we come together, it is loud. And he did say to me, we need to keep speaking. We need to keep using that voice and making ourselves heard. But he sounded terrible, and I feel so bad for him as well. And
the other thing I've got to say is that we've got to keep, you know, like, we've got to keep generating work. And so I've got, I had a project that I started about 3 years ago under lockdown, or 2 years ago, which was a magazine called Union that will feature only Palestinian artists and their work, right? And I've reignited that thing, and the amount of people who've come on board to help, and we're going to launch that next week. So, and this is not some pathetic attempt to kind of humanize Palestinians by showing the complexity and beauty of their artwork. It's just like but we need to keep generating work, because it's like, we need to keep making, you know, whether you've got a guitar behind you, Talal, whether it's like making sound, or whether it's making comedy, or whether it's making work.
That's
like,
not easy at the moment.
Yeah, like, this is a good point. This is interesting, because I have a comedy gig next week. It's my first gig since this fucking bullshit started, and I'm dreading it. I don't feel like laughing or making people laugh at all these days. And I'm dreading it, and I don't know what the fuck. Am I just going to stand up there and scream? I don't know. you know, what the fuck am I going to do? And it's not something I want to do at the moment. And this podcast has been my only work, really, in the last few weeks. And I'm very grateful for it. Yeah. Because we're actually talking about the shit that's happening, and and nothing else seems important. But on the other hand, I just before you, because there was another opportunity I've been having to start a new project with someone, and I messaged him the other day. I said, I'm not really in the mood to do it. But that was in the morning. And then later that afternoon, I messaged him again and said, you know what? I in the morning, I'm more depressed than in the afternoon. I feel like this is the time that Arabs like me should be doing normal, fun things just to be an example and show the world that we're not these human animals that they're saying we are and stuff, you know. So we should be out there just doing normal, non-political stuff and carrying on and being the example that we can be. So I fluctuate from wanting to work to wanting to not work, you know.
I think it's so important to just generate. And it's like, you know, honestly, if we're honest with with each other, I mean, the history of humanity is this history, you know. I mean, without social media, you know, can you imagine what the Crusades must have looked like on social media? I mean, right? I mean, it's like, can you imagine getting up in the morning and watching the Crusades for fucking, how long were they in operation? Like a decade or something? It's like, so, or.
Yeah, we didn't even have social media during the Iraq War. There wasn't really social media.
I've got Mel Brooks, you know, Mel Brooks in my head. It's like, I was. Do you remember in the history of the world, the Inquisition? What a show! The Inquisition. What do you know? Hey, Tokamada. So it's like this stuff's important. It's important because we've got to keep going, and you know, we've got to keep each other going. And it's so like this is. Otherwise, it's just, you know, like. I saw my grandmother, you know, she was one of the sole survivors of her family. She was a crumpled, collapsed human being. And she had no reason to keep going every day. And she did just because the human body demands to stay alive, yeah? But I think that we are... As you say, we're not in Gaza. We're also so privileged to have the education and talents.
I think, thank fuck, no, I'm not in Germany, never mind. We also be in the UK. But fucking hell, that sounds bad enough.
Well, I don't know. You can come
on.
You can have a spa in Baden-Baden.
Jesus, I mean, what a fucking... Oh, I mean, man. The lack of, you know, the lack of understanding of irony would just... send me crazy, I think, apart from anything else.
Yeah.
So.
But I'm still, you promised me you would come, and I'm going to take you to the Brecht and Benjamin archive.
Okay.
So, no, but these are the things, like a friend of mine, you know, there's a Palestinian film event going on tonight, and this is the reason. So a friend of mine bought me a train ticket, and I came here, and I was like, I had to get up at 5 a.m. to get the 6-hour train. And then I got here and it's like, I'm so happy to be here because otherwise I'd be sitting at home just going like, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
If we can get enough supporters on the Patreon to fly me and Alexi out to Berlin.
I can probably afford a couple of tickets. No,
we need more.
You'll have to go. You'll have to go in the back.
Okay. Fine. I won't plug the Patreon then.
I plug the Patreon as well. I think they have to. We can't ask them for plane tickets. We just have to ask them for.
Well, it's production costs. Isn't it? Yeah. No. Help pay my wages, guys. I'm working more than usual at the moment. So go to patreon.com/AlexisHale podcast to support the show.
And yes, I will come. I will come out there soon, Adam. Sorry.
Please come. Please come. And also,
if they let us in,
and also support my Instagram, which I'm really terrified that's going to be taken down. So,
what's the handle?
It's Adam Broomberg. So
easy.
So just Broomberg with an E as well. B-R-O-O-M-B-E-R-G. Yeah. From the guys, thank you for this. It's like these are important. Like, they just give hope, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, thank you very much. I think it's you know, it's really important. This conversation, mm-hmm. these conversations, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. they get a part when they go out. They exponentially their power increases. Really, so.
Yeah, and
thank you, Adam. And you know, I mean, you know, your life is, I think, very tough, in a very tough place, and you are not shirking your responsibilities, and I find that extremely impressive.
Thank you. Thanks both of you.
You're welcome.
Good luck with the police charge, man. Looks, sounds like you've got sufficient evidence to fight it.
No, it's just they're just trying to silence me, you know.
Right, cheers, Adam. Thank you. We'll see you soon.
Bye. Lots of love.
Bye.
Ciao.
Guten Abend. Well, that went places. I wasn't expecting it to go. I think that's the beauty and the challenge of podcasts, that, you know, you don't need to stick to an agenda. And Adam is, I think, somebody who is clearly not going to be constrained.
Well, he's an artist, isn't he? I forgot. Yeah. He's not actually like a politician or anything. So his mind goes, it follows his heart, you know? And that's the beautiful thing about the guy, you know? He's as meandering as the River Rhine.
And he's also under tremendous stress. I mean, as I said, I can't imagine what it's like to live in that place at this time. That's us for this week. Let's see what further horrors. We're sorry that we've
further horrors.
If anybody's been hanging on for the Peter Capaldi double episode box set, it will be here at some point.
It just feels a bit silly putting out some pop culture light chat during a time like this, you know.
Yeah, I think I'm seeing Peter on Sunday. I'll apologize to him.
It will come out.
Yeah, it does, really. I don't know.
Can I also just say so much love to all the comments and emails, the YouTube comments and the emails we're getting. We have gotten so much solidarity and love for our last two episodes, which has kicked me on to keep doing stuff like this, because Tom Mayhew, previous guest, has reached out to say he's loved we've been putting out. Josie Long has reached out and given us a big, big hug over our episodes. Jenny Manson loved the episode and sent us her love, as did AJ a number of times. So many beautiful emails. I want to thank you all. And I want to shout out Nate, who's emailed a number of times and is still listening, even though I haven't replied to any of their emails. So thank you so much. And the YouTube comments, like, there's a couple of people being dickheads in the comments, but people are also replying and telling them they're idiots. Yeah. So, but mostly, fucking beautiful. Yeah. We love you. Thank you so much for the support. And
thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
You've been listening to the Alexis L podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexislpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.